Or is one of the spokespersons of this. I think my voice just got enhanced. That, there we go. We have theological confirmation. The whole internet came alive, and the first thing they heard me say was, enhancement is God-given. There goes my career. There is this movement, this transhumanist movement, that is based on the belief, and we talked about it last night, that the best thing we can do as human beings is transcend natural limits. And here's why. There's no meaningful purpose or goal to human existence. There's not anything we're supposed to be living for. There's no telos, there's no ultimate thing, target, that we're supposed to fulfill. Rather, we just simply exist, and life takes on whatever meaning we give it, period. Sartre's famous statement, existence precedes essence. You first exist, then only later do you get essence by the choices you make. Every bioethical decision, whether we're talking abortion, embryonic stem cell research, cloning, genetic enhancement, doctor-assisted suicide, is going to involve certain worldview commitments. Everybody brings them to the table. Now, I know Steven Pinker said, no, we don't want any worldview commitments. Everybody just show up and we'll do bioethics with strictly consent and autonomy, and that'll be enough. Well, it doesn't work that way. Everybody does metaphysics. Everybody does epistemology, and I will define these words in a minute. Everybody is doing philosophical anthropology. Everybody is doing ethics and morality, and everybody is doing cosmology. I don't care who you are doing those things. And we see it in the enhancement movement. So let me define those terms, and then we'll kind of see how this plays out. Metaphysics, big word. It simply means the ultimate reality or ultimate grounding for things. What is the nature of reality would be a metaphysical question. What is ultimate reality? As Christians, of course, we think ultimate reality is what? God. Yeah, okay. If you're a materialist, you believe it's the universe. Carl Sagan, what was his famous phrase? The universe, all there ever was, all there ever will be.
All that is and all that ever will be.
All that ever will be. There's your metaphysical ultimate reality. Epistemology is where it really gets fun. That's how we know things. How do we know things? That's what epistemology is dealing with. The secular epistemology today is that you can't know anything if you can't touch it, taste it, feel it, see it. If you can't do those things, it's not real knowledge. It's mere faith, which we talked about last night. It's mere subjective opinion, all right? Then you come down to what is known as philosophical anthropology. That has to do with what is the nature of man. What is our nature? Is it strictly physical? Is there an immaterial nature to us? Is there something we ought to fulfill as human beings to live out our nature? Everybody's asking those questions. We're also asking the question, of course, about ethics. How do you ground right and wrong? Are they personal and subjective, or are they real and knowable? And then finally, we're all doing cosmology. What happens to us at death? Where did we come from? What happens after death? Everyone in these debates is operating on assumptions flowing from one of those five or all of those five areas. And so the idea that only Christians are the ones bringing metaphysics or theology or philosophy or religion into this, that's bogus. Everybody is doing it. So with those worldviews in mind, which worldview is going to be more likely to support an enhancement idea? Which one? A worldview that says what about humans?
No intrinsic value.
No goal. No nature, no goal that we're supposed to fulfill. And the transhumanist movement starts with this premise. There is no goal to human existence. Therefore, why not enhance? And the whole goal is to leapfrog the human race above current limitations to a whole new order. That's what Gregory Stock wants to do. And if you want a good book on this, get Wesley J. Smith's book, Brave New Technology. Let me get this right. Here I am. I need enhancement. Where's that Diet Coke, Wendell? Brave New Ethics, I think it is. I'll think of it before we're done here. But that book deals with this whole transhumanist drive to reinvent ourselves anew. Okay, now, of these worldview assumptions, I think we can criticize some of them and look at some of them. What do you see right off the top of your head with a worldview that says we can't know anything outside science? Can you see a problem with it right away that's going to limit us on how we can approach this? Yeah, what kind of claim am I making when I say science is the only truth? Can I verify that? It's a philosophic claim. It's self-refuting. It's like saying, you know, my brother's an only child, or I can't win a, or I can't speak a word in English, or the Colts are going to win the Super Bowl next year, or something like that, you know, that can't be true, right? I said that in Denver last year, and I got burned. Yeah, it didn't work out too well. Is Peyton coming back, by the way? Not without enhancement, right? I mean, he's going to need it. What kind of view of human nature are you going to have if you believe the universe came from nothing and was caused by nothing? Are you going to have an endowment view that says we're valuable by nature, or a functional view that says our value is based on function? Function. In that world, are you going to be opposed to enhancement? Not a chance. You're going to go right for this. This is why this isn't troubling to a lot of our friends. They're like, what's the big deal? Why not go this way? Why not reinvent human beings? If human beings are the product of blind random chance, accidental universe, there's nothing wrong with enhancing or, well, let me put it this way. I don't see how anything has intrinsic value if we're the product of blind random chance. I don't care what your state of development, fetus, newborn, embryo, old person, adult, 21-year-old strongman, nothing has value. This is where David Boonin gets into a lot of trouble in his defense of abortion. He says pro-lifers have to rely on religion to say the fetus has a right to life. They can't get there without any other worldview. The problem he has, his view of abortion doesn't fit with anybody's worldview. He says we got to draw a line at 28 weeks and not abort after that. Wait a minute. If you pull religion out of this and we're all the product of blind random chance, why does a fetus at 28 weeks suddenly get value? His view doesn't fit in either world. At least mine fits in one. All right, some things to talk about here about Dr. Bright. I'll just throw out some ideas here and then I'd like to hear your thoughts. I think that Denny made a really good point, that there is a world of difference between repairing a natural function and editing the nature of the thing itself. Now, I don't know if my quote here, maybe I didn't do a good enough job. This was a contrived quote. I made this up to make you think, and I realized I could enhance it a little better. But I was trying to make the point that you are tinkering with the biological nature of the human being with this gene editing stuff here that I talked about. If we're doing that, and we're doing it for the purpose of enhancing, why isn't that going outside God's intended order, His created order? I think it is. Am I alone in that?
No.
I mean, it seems to me, if God created an order to things and set limits on human capacity within our nature, I'm not saying we can never take an aspirin, that's not my point, but editing the nature of the thing itself, I'm not okay with that. I think that crosses a line that Dr. Bright here is crossing. Kevin Van Hooser puts it real well. He says, the quest for cognitive enhancement is as old as Adam and Eve. It's a denial of the created order and represents salvation through medical technology. I think he's on to something. Now, for the Christian, what is our goal, our ultimate goal as a Christian? Living out our sanctified, or living out sanctification, what is our ultimate goal? Is it enhancement or something else? It's something else. Our goal isn't enhancement. Our goal is to be conformed to the mind of Christ, isn't it? It's being conformed to that mind. That's what is the thing that really should be driving us as Christians. And this is about something completely different. It's a completely different intent here. It's about enhancing my own abilities so I get ahead. It's not about being conformed to the mind of Christ. What about this, though? Is the Christian concerned about a perfected body here, or are we aiming at a resurrected body? That's our ultimate aim here, and a desperation for enhancement certainly doesn't seem to fit that. I am curious, though, does anybody disagree with the 3 points I just made? And you'd say, no, I think, yeah, go ahead.
Well, what if Dr. Bragg came up with something that enhanced your human nature so that you would be less sinful and you would not be as selfish?
I don't think I'd want that pill. I'd get boring. No, I'm kidding. Here's the problem with that, I think. The question was, what about a pill that would reduce sin, cause us to sin less? Sin, yeah. Here's the thing. Morality cannot be reduced to behavior. For example, stealing and borrowing look the same. But what changes it is the intent, right? A drug isn't going to change the intentions of the heart, but it can certainly alter behavior. You may not be as aggressive. You may not be as nasty in the way you talk. Not that you are. But the issues of the heart would still be there. And then you still have the problem that we as humans have indwelling. We not only have indwelling sin, we have inherited sin, a sin nature from Adam. So we have federal sin and guilt in addition to the bad things we do day by day. No pill is going to get rid of the federal problem. So I don't know how that would even work within a Christian framework. It is an interesting, I think it could control behavior. Maybe the drug, well, yeah, the drug could certainly do that. I don't know what the dentist gave me a couple of weeks ago, but it was really good. I felt so peaceful. I mean, I was hearing the eagles all over the place, peacefully.
So Pascal had that mindset that even if you didn't have the right heart and
yeah.
that you control your behavior, that could possibly bring about a change of heart.
We're not saying that behavior can't change attitudes. I think we know that it can. What we are saying is a pill is not going to, in and of itself, deal with the core issues of the human heart and the evil that's there. Those aren't material things, and the drug is addressing a material thing, the body. It's not addressing immaterial things like thoughts. Just because your brain affects your thoughts does not mean your thoughts are your brain, any more than smoke is fire. Your thoughts are immaterial. Your brain impacts your thinking, but it isn't the same as your thinking.
Okay, Bucky. Okay, my husband went through the seminary and I took some courses.
Uh-huh.
Okay, God had put a hole in our hearts to follow him, to want to follow him, and atheists who don't believe in God and following him, they go after other things to be their God.
Yeah, they do. They follow other gods. They don't fulfill that longing the right way.
Mm-hmm. I'm a God. I'm not going to follow God because I'm creative.
There could be, yes, the question is there could be a drive to defy God by being our own creator, our own boss, certainly. Now let's make this a little more.
Why can't you want the enhancement to glorify God more?
Yeah, let's run with that.
Yeah, you desire that. It says it's safe and legal.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a drug that will enable me to work 40 extra hours a week and earn triple the income I'll donate to the poor.
Right, there you go.
He's suddenly saying, I'm poor. No. What? Well, does that change it? What worldview, by the way, did we just start making our ethical decisions according to? Utilitarianism. Yeah. I don't think that gets us around the problem I'm concerned about here versus repair versus enhancement. Anybody else want to come down on the enhancement side in the back?
What about a drug that like stops you from like criminals that have extra chromosomes that make you
Now, be careful telling the secular world that something that fixes homosexuality is reparative. It could get you in jail these days, but... yeah, no, see... You are onto something here, that there is a huge tension between what's reparative and what's actually doing enhancement. That, I mean, and I will confess to you that some of this, I'm not entirely settled on myself, whether I'm not quite ready to say enhancement is always wrong. In this case, I believe it is. For the purpose it's being used, for one thing, and the fact that we are altering the nature of the thing itself. But this is what's going on in bioethics and why we as Christians have got to take these issues and begin thinking very seriously about what our theology means in this regard. Go ahead, Nate.
I was going to say, I don't know that we're just sort of presupposing that our intrinsic capacity or our intrinsic human nature is such that it's manifesting in the normal, again, aggregate cognitive abilities that we have, and so what's to say that it's just not our immediate capacity that we're exercising in the way we think and act. What's to say that our true nature as human beings is not compromised by a medication that allows us to think a bit more clearly? Because, I mean, at its base, that's what we're arguing. We're saying an additional clarity of thought, whether it's by genetic change or not, is going to be compromising our human nature, and I don't know that I see this.
Well, in this case, though, I meant to say that we are dealing with a genetic structure change.
But even if we are, though, it still doesn't seem to me that we're compromising human nature by doing that.
Okay, so if I define human nature strictly in physical, biological terms, and I edit that nature, I've edited human nature, according to my secularist friends. Is that, though, how we as Christians view human nature?
No. No.
How do we view human nature? Be careful here.
Soul. Yeah, soul.
It's fallen, but what is... What are human beings? What is a human nature? I mean, what is it that makes us human?
Created in the image of God.
Well, that's what gives us value, that we're made in God's image. But isn't that kind of reductionist, though, to say we're just reduced to DNA? What I'm getting at is, in the Christian tradition, human beings are not strictly bodies. They're not strictly souls, a Gnostic view. We are a dynamic union of body and soul. Christianity puts a lot of emphasis on the body. The body matters. Other Eastern religions don't, but Christianity does. Paul did not long to go be with the Lord as a ghost. He longed for a resurrected body. And he made a point in 1 Corinthians 15 that resurrected body has to be central to Christian theology, or we have nothing to bank on. That's how important he made it. Christian resurrection is not death, and then you go to be with God and you exist as kind of this ghost outside your body. No, Christian resurrection is you go through death and come out the other side with a perfected and glorified body, just like Jesus did, no longer subject to death, illness, or injury. That's or sin, of course. That's the resurrection view of the Bible. So if the body matters to the Christian, Nate, to your point, to what extent should we be messing with the natural limits God has put there? And
but again, I think the burden in this case is on the person making the definitive claim that it compromises human nature in order to show that definitionally this is what human nature is, and instant medication in this one, in this instance, that it's going to be compromising in a way that would be displeasing to God. I think it would seem like the burden is squarely on that person's shoulder.
Let's go ahead and look at some possible concerns or dangers here. What's going to happen to a culture that isn't, where the majority of citizens aren't looking to fulfill their human natures but enhance them? What happens when, as a Christian, for example, I'm not looking for conforming myself to the mind of Christ, but I'm looking to enhance my abilities, and then you pull out all the moral restraint we talked about last night with the new dignity that's no longer there. Morals have moved from realism to non-realism. I don't think I'm making just a slippery slope argument to say that really puts us in a precarious position. What if I could take a drug that changed the chemical makeup of my mind, or let's say it did edit DNA, whatever, or gene structure, and now I could wipe you out on the law school exam? I don't even have to study. I got photographic memory. I've got intuitive abilities that put me way ahead of. Why is that any different than an athlete who takes steroids to hit 60 home runs when he could hit 20 before?
Well, I didn't make steroids illegal.
No, I'm not asking if you made them illegal. I'm just asking, is there a difference? I mean, we frown at the... Doesn't virtually everybody frown at these athletes who do this? But they don't frown at this. What's that? You know, baseball didn't work too hard to stop it, did they? They let it go. I mean, you had those home runs going with Mark McGwire and Sosa and who was the other guy? Yeah. I mean, that was crazy. They made a lot of money off this. Yeah. Oh, Dr. Francis, then you.
Well, I just was going to say, I think we did this in the Life Defenders course this past summer, and I had the same trouble with it then.
Yep. Yeah.
Taking an egg from a woman and a sperm from the husband, and if the woman carries a mitochondrial disorder, they splice out the mitochondrial DNA and splice in mitochondrial DNA from another woman's egg, and so they're considered three-parent embryos. And
yeah.
It's been done before when kids were born, and then they ended up with ocular cancers and all kinds of weird things, and these weird mutations happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that it's right, because we don't know the potential down-the-line effects that this is going to have. And certainly if it involves harvesting an embryo and that embryo losing his or her life because you're just using pieces from it, then obviously that presents a moral wrong. But I guess where I have a problem is it wrong because you're altering the genes? Is that in and of itself wrong? And that's where I'm struggling with, is that wrong? Personally, I think the three-parent embryos are wrong because, again, it's just, okay, we can do this, so we're doing it, but we have absolutely no idea what's going to come down the line from what we're doing. And so that, I think, is why it's wrong in my mind. But do you see where I'm coming from?
Well, different issue, but take the issue of cloning. Dolly, the cloned sheep, did not do well. Yeah, she lived, but she had all kinds of problems, and cloning technology is not anywhere near perfected, but people want to pursue it anyway and transcend limits. So your concern would be primarily along the lines of the consequences of this, what will become of it.
Right. And the whole thing of just because we can, does that mean that we can?
Right.
But I just don't know that I feel necessarily like altering necessarily wrong in and of itself. I don't know that it is, but it's the outcome down the line. To me, where this would fall apart is, are we trying to get to an intellectual level where we think we are just as smart as God? If that's the case, then, I mean, Greg, you said it kind of jokingly, but...
I don't joke.
but I mean, that's...
Well, let's go back further than that. What did the serpent say to Eve? You will be like God. What did he offer her? Enhancement. Right? I mean, you'll have knowledge you don't currently have. Let's take an example that I think we don't even have to do science fiction on.
Wrath of Khan.
Wrath of Khan. That was the best Star Wars movie, or Star Trek movie. I'll come to you in just a second. We have therapies involving what we call somatic gene therapy, and we have germline therapy. The somatic stuff, what we do is we mess with the structure of the individual, but none of the changes go down the line to descendants. With germ cell therapy, we're talking about it gets passed on to everybody down the line. Suppose we had the ability to edit out of a family line a trait, let's say sickle cell, and we were going to do it germline. You going for that? I mean, I could argue that's not enhancement, that's repair, right? Let's say it worked. Let's say Christina's thing isn't an issue. We're going to edit this out, and we think we have pretty good reason to believe it would work. Although I think you're right. In reality, we don't know. But let's say, would we do it?
To get rid of sickle cell trait?
Uh-huh.
Doing it with cystic fibrosis.
Yeah.
Get rid of sickle cell. Sickle cell trait, don't they believe it started out because it made them people that carry the trait?
Right, yeah. It was actually an adaptive thing.
Yeah, adaptive thing.
So you do that. Somebody else comes along and says, you know what, I'm sick of my kid having ugly brown hair. I want straight teeth. And I'm tired of the ADHD symptoms I'm seeing in a lot of our family.
Amen. I myself suffer from it.
I would have never guessed. I would have never known.
You would be designing someone, wouldn't you?
Question of, are you designing? Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sooner or later, if you develop a Superman, the armies will start to gather, too.
I saw that in Star Wars, the clone army. No. No, seriously, back to your point. I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't we do this? But now let's stop for a moment, though, and are we going to be able to, in our current moral climate, I want you to think about the culture around us, the new dignity, the loss of moral meaning, technology unhinged for morality. Do you really want to go there in this world? Are you going to be able to control that technology, even if there was nothing wrong with it? Let's say there's nothing wrong with editing to get out the sickle cell. Once you do that, how do you tell? I know it sounds like a slippery slope, but seriously, I want you to think about our culture, where we're at right now. Humans have no intrinsic value. Moral truth is not real and knowable. Dignity is not the image of God and man. It's my ability to do whatever I want to create myself anew. In that kind of world, are you going to control that kind of technology? And could it create a class of haves and have-nots? There's those that are enhanced who get all the nice high-paying jobs and all the benefits, all the medical treatment, and there's the non-enhanced who maybe through economic reasons couldn't get it, They get their care ration. They get the lousier jobs. I mean, it's not that far off to see that being what would happen. I cannot imagine how in our current culture that would be used correctly. I think that's a huge danger. Huge danger.
In India, they had caste system.
Yes. Yeah, same like a caste system. Exactly. So maybe if we're talking gene therapy that involves just changing the individual, that'd be one thing. But passing things down the line, that's scary to me. And even if I could say I don't see anything wrong in it in itself, I just don't. I think we better keep our strict limits on that and not go down that road. Any other questions on enhancing before I bring up a few other points? Yeah, I'll give you what those 3 points were. They were these. That number one, it is one thing to repair. It is another thing to enhance or change the nature of the thing itself. This point Denny was getting at. And then I said for the Christian, point number two, that transformation does not come through some kind of biochemistry or chemical savior. It comes through conforming our minds, or I shouldn't say salvation doesn't, but our ultimate good comes through conforming our minds to Christ, not enhancement. And then thirdly, our ultimate hope is not an enhanced body, it's a resurrected body. That's what we as Christians, we have a better story here. We're not going to get an enhanced body that still has flaws. We're going to get a resurrected and perfected body. That's the theological grid the Christian would look at this through. And that the resurrected body is absolutely central to Christian theology. Paul does not long for a free spirit where he's a ghost absent the body. He longs for a resurrected body that follows the pattern of Christ who went through death and came out the other side with that resurrected and perfected body. So those were my 3 points. I recognize they could be open to debate, but that's where theologically I would work that through. I knew this last session would be the one. I told Wendell, didn't I? I said, we're going to get some fireworks in this one because of this. All right, a couple of points on this to wrap up before we take some more questions. Let's talk about some everyday things. Braces for your kids. I think we all would agree, why not? Of course. But as a Christian, What would you want to, as you communicate? I mean, we're doing this with our daughter. Our daughter is 15, and when she was 13, we started her on her orthodontics therapy. I actually had a theological discussion with her on it. I developed a theology of braces. She thought I was off track, but anyway, no, I'm sorry. That was a bad pun. What do you think I told her when we sat down to commence that treatment? Anybody want to guess? Besides, oh yeah, you're beautiful, you're my daughter, and of course I tell her that every day, but what do you think I told her? I did, that her real beauty is God-given. I did that, but I even went a little further than that. I sat her down and I said, honey, we're going to talk about what it means that you bear God's image. You bear God's image simply because you're a human being. Not because you're smart, which you are. Not because you're beautiful, because I think you're the second most beautiful woman in the world. Not because you're clever. Not because you're probably destined for Broadway. And my daughter probably is. She is really good in the theater department. Sings. Our house is constant music. There is never a time where that voice is not singing. It's great. But I said, honey, your source of value is not straight teeth. Your source of value is strictly you bear the image of your maker, period. And that image in you is not marred because of your teeth or your brain and how well you think or how well you sing. It's strictly because of whose image you bear. And that was a good talk to have. My daughter will tell you I make everything theology with her. She's as crazy as I am about going to England and London. And when she goes with me, I say, honey, you love the buildings over there. What are they pointing you to? Yeah, Dad, the heavenly city. London's just a picture of the heavenly. Yeah, I'm trying to make a Platonist out of it. No, I'm just kidding. But trying to help our kids see these things that the culture says really give them value so that enhancements like braces or things like athletic training or whatever, they don't make that the source of God's image and God's value in them. Other concerns about this technology we looked at. Gilbert Melander talks about, as Christians, we ought to accept the givenness of life. Catholics do a lot better job with this than we do. But there's something about the givenness of life. Now, that's a general, broad principle, but I look at this and I see a rejection of the givenness of life, this enhancement drug. It doesn't mean, again, you can never take an aspirin, but I do wonder, is there something about a rejection of that givenness of life? And I also wonder, too, what's going to happen in our culture if these therapies are there and you as a Christian family choose not to take them? Would you get accused of child neglect, I wonder? What happens if you're a homeschooling family and you let it be known in the community you're not doing certain shots or vaccines? I mean, some schools you won't even get into anymore if you haven't had all your shots, right? Isn't that how it kind of works? And you've got to go through all this paperwork to... And I'm not here to make a case for or against vaccines. I'm just saying you can already see that just with vaccines, right? Where's it going to go when there's some drug that or some therapy that would really radically enhance and you choose not to go that way with your kids? More of the have and have-nots, of course. I also wonder, too, if it's going to undermine the incentive to be people who put forth effort. Sort of related topic. At lunch at the restaurant, we were talking about people addicted to narcotic painkillers and the excuses they will go to get the drugs. And I got an education on how, the patients, the people will come in and pretend they don't even know what the drug is called and try to fool the physician into writing the prescription for them. Oh, well, I was on this drug one time. The physician will offer them something that's not narcotic. No, that wasn't it. You know, and they're pushing the physician toward what they really want. And, you know, what is it going to do to our drive to want to be excellent and good and when our enhancement is coming from outside of us using what God has given us to be better people? These are concerns that I think we all need to be talking about and concerned about when we deal with any kind of enhancement like this. All right, final thoughts on enhancement? One more, go ahead.
Would it be like controlling the population with enhancements?
Well, would it be controlling the population? I think it would certainly result in a situation where you could have the have and have nots, where those who haven't been enhanced could exploit those who have been. We see the rich and poor kind of exploitation all the time now. One thing I didn't talk about yesterday, we have a situation, or this morning rather, we have a situation with surrogate mothers now that are being recruited from India and other third world countries at a fraction of the cost that it costs you to do it here in America. And so what rich Americans are doing, they're getting poor women through an agency in a third world country to sign up to be their surrogates, and they get paid a fraction of what an American woman would get paid, and they serve as gestational surrogates. And as long as their wombs are healthy enough to sustain the life of the child, then, you know, fine. And is that exploiting poor women? Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And how about egg donors from third world countries who are going through a very complex egg harvesting procedure, but because they're poor, they're at risk for that. They need the money. They'll do whatever they have to do to get it. So I don't think I want to add to that with some kind of enhancement thing. All right, final questions on this? All right, Final questions on anything related to reproductive technologies, end-of-life issues. I want to get to your living will question. Can you go ahead and state that for everybody so that...
Mm-hmm. And I think it's wiser to leave the medical decisions to the family plan.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, very good point. Terry was saying that when in many hospitals now, they like these advanced directives or living wills where you notify the medical profession of what your wishes are in advance in case you're not able to make those decisions for yourself at the time. The problem is that's taking it out of the realm of the family, the people closest to you, the people that ought to be more involved. I think there's a place for letting your family members know what you would like in terms of care. I think it's fine if a Christian, or anybody for that matter, says, as I reach the end of life, I don't want extraordinary treatment that isn't going to be helpful to me, and to have some general guideline about that. But when you put it in the hands of the medical staff and take it outside the family, I think that's not a good thing at all. And I think it then puts people making decisions who are no more expert than you in judging the value of a life. They're only expert in judging the value of a treatment. And it puts moral decision-making in their power. And that's why I'm troubled by that. I'm assuming you were troubled by it too. Yeah. Yes, you are. They're going online, they're looking for the advance directive, and yeah, that's right. What if your family's not even there yet, doesn't even know? Yeah. Deeply problematic.
I guess, but if you don't have those wishes known to the medical community, then what are they going to do? If you don't give them
then they have to do everything possible to save.
Yeah. They're supposed to do everything they can, correct. Yeah, supposed to. Yeah. Yeah, except for Steve Weimer's mom who just needed antibiotics and they wouldn't even give her that. Yeah, that's not good at all. Yes, in theory. I'm not saying it's wrong in principle. I'm just saying there are problems to look at here. You are taking decision-making. Your family members closest to you. What if you filed that thing a couple of years ago? And what if your thinking's changed? I don't know. It just seems to me it's shutting the family out of what should be the people closest to you who know you best making those decisions. I think making them known, writing them out would be a good thing. I'm not sure I want the hospital being the final authority, though.
Or the insurance company.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Thank you. Who are they really representing? Not your best interest necessarily. Little infomercial before. Hold that thought. Don't lose it. Little infomercial before I forget, because I will forget. I do have some books up here if you want them. We have the book, The Case for Life. We have our new TV show on National Religious Broadcasting Network called Life is Best. It's 13 episodes, 29 minutes of pro-life apologetics programming. This is great for students. It's fast-moving. Myself and my team at LTI, we go on campus at the University of Georgia, and we interview students. We talk to relativists, and we talk to them about pro-life. And you can see this. We've got other people in here. Matt Chandler's in here. John MacArthur's in here. Vody Bachman's in here. Who else? Jay Watts, Paul Washer, Wendell Brain. No. We're going to get him in season two. We got a part for a grumpy old uncle, and we're going to bring him in. And
don't unplug me.
Every 5 minutes, don't unplug me. That'll be that would be awesome. I think I just got the idea for season two. Oh, that is great. That's right out of a Monty Python sketch. Don't unplug me every 5 minutes. This guy. How many of you have to fellowship with him weekly? And we have the book Stand for Life, which is a book I wrote with John Enzer. It's a nice book for students as well. If you want all three, we are asking, we're going to do a special deal for you. 50 bucks, that's it. This normally would be 79, 50 bucks. You got them. If you want this individually, 15. This individually, 39. And this individually, 10. So that's the scheme. You can decide what you want to do. Or I can make that decision for you.
Death panel.
All right, questions. Let's take a few more, and then we're going to wrap up for the day. Yeah.
Well, having been an ICU nurse for many, many years, you encountered situations where family members would not let go of the individual who is clearly not going to recover. And so, you know, you saw medical professionals trying to discuss with the family,
right,
but the family absolutely says no.
Yeah.
Well, in that situation, what do you do?
Yeah, well, Christine is right. If there is no advance directive, then they're obligated to keep trying to keep the person, or they're supposed to try to keep the person alive.
But I've seen where they had advance directives and they've been ignored.
They were ignored.
They're afraid of being sued by the family.
By the family, yeah. I don't know legally what the way around that is, but I will say this, that my own teacher at Biola, who's a medical ethicist, he's on ethics boards at hospitals, Scott Ray, he has told stories of that exact same thing, where family will not let a person die. And, you know, they demand CPR on a 92-year-old man who's clearly dying, dialysis, whatever, and these treatments aren't helping the person. Of course, you know, Christians worry, well, when then it gets fuzzy, what's treatment, what isn't, how do we know whether it's beneficial or futile treatment? We struggle with those lines, but it still doesn't change the basic point that just because we hold a sanctity of human life ethic, that we must always resist death, always. I don't think we should. As Christians, this life is not our ultimate good.
We've had to do so many futile dialysis treatments that it has the perverse effect of causing teammates, colleagues of mine who aren't Christians to have a very utilitarian ethic because they're sick to death of doing, unnecessary treatments. You know, I made a lot of money dialyzing virtually dead people, but...
Yeah. This is why, by the way, having a syllogism for our pro-life argument is important, so that when people get mad at us, when they see abuses in it, they can't get away with thinking our whole case is nuts. Our syllogism is it's wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Abortion and doctor-assisted suicide intentionally kill innocent human beings, therefore they're wrong. That syllogism does not forbid letting death happen. It doesn't require us to always resist it. That's why when pro-abortionists say, if you really believe life begins at conception, then that means you've got to make sure that if sperm and egg are accidentally washed down the drain together, you've got to dive through the pipes and make sure they're separated and save the ones that were fertilized. I mean, all these kinds of crazy things they love to come up with in debates. I've heard this, by the way, in debates. Our argument is clear. And coming back to that syllogism helps us. All right. Final thoughts or questions?
I'm a theologian, not a plumber.
No, you're a kidney guy from what you just told me.
Thank you.
Oh, glad to do it. Any other questions? Yeah.
I don't have a question, but I got a comment about the whole enhancer thing.
I knew you were, I've been watching your eyes for about 20 minutes, and I'm going, he is going to unload. I'm just waiting for it. FloJo.
She won sprints in the Olympics, whatever year it was, before they were testing.
Yeah.
And then she just keels over at, her early 40s or something?
Yeah.
And
Lyle Elzado, football player with the Raiders.
Yeah, there's a lot of football players that are, well, now they got a, their suicide rate among football players, and you know, whether it's steroids or head, you know, concussion trauma and all that. But yeah, it just it seems like when you try to, at least in my lifetime, when you try to, you know, to one up God, it never, I've never seen it work out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unintended consequences.
I think.
I don't know what happened to Ben Johnson, but.
Yeah, man. That guy was fast till they found out what he was shooting up with. Yeah.
He wasn't fast anyway. That's what kills me about it. I mean, Barry Bonds still would have made the Hall of Fame. He would have made the Hall of Fame because he was a five-tool player, you know. But
yeah. Well, Bonds weighed about 10 pounds heavier than me when he was playing with the Pirates, and now, you know.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's one of the few things that's true. It's not opinion.
Yeah, yeah, it's not opinion. Powers family.
I really agree about this enhancement. I think it's very dangerous because it leads to some very scary places. But I think possibly picking up on what Nate was talking about and the distinction between repairing and enhancing, can you give us a bit of a distinction? I mean, I understand someone that's born, like, mentally.
Sure. Kind of going from 6 inches of leg room to maybe 10, you know, maybe that'd be all right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where that line is. That's why this is what I'm getting at here. The distinction in every case between repair and enhancement is difficult in every case. I should say in every case it isn't clear. Some cases I think it is. I think Denny's general point is the fence we want to put around this, that there is a difference between repairing something to bring it up to loss, so it restores loss function, and something where we're just changing the nature of the thing itself. And to what extent are we changing the nature of the thing itself with these biological enhancements? That's the debate that's happening. I come back to those 3 points I made earlier, that for the Christian, our goal is not enhancement, it's conforming our minds to Christ. And that our ultimate reality is not enhancement mentally or physically, it is resurrected body that's perfected. I come back to those as another, you know, a fence post way of looking at this. I'm making kind of a cumulative case here. This isn't as easy as doing the pro-life stuff where it's real easy. Human being, we don't kill human beings, you know, intentionally. This stuff, you know, when Wendell asked me to come do this, I'm like, oh, great, I get to come and provoke controversy. Usually when I come talk about abortion, it's just easy. One question, we're going to build our case. But this is going to require Christians to wrestle with some issues. And we're going to have to be very committed to thinking biblically, and I think our case is going to be, in some ways, more of a cumulative case where the preponderance of evidence points to maybe we shouldn't be doing some things than me being able to say, here's your verse in Scripture, and there it is. And I can't tell you in every case whether we're dealing with enhancement without really... I do believe this. I wouldn't go there. I would not take that drug.